Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
March 30th, 2019. Thank you for joining me yet again. Well, we have yet another U.S. bombing in what is becoming an almost daily occurrence. For those that are watching this show, that has killed 50 people in Syria. Bombing in Gaza still continues today, with at least one innocent life being taken this morning, all stemming from one rocket and their disproportionate Israeli response. Israel just announced another 4,500 widely acknowledged as illegal settlements. Of course, settlements, clearly emboldened by Trump's recent proclamation, as I pointed out recently. Another blackout in Venezuela has the U.S. oligarchy desperately trying to force through its floundering illegal coup attempt. Guaido literally is calling for open revolution on the streets as Trump and his gaggle of war hawks demand Russia leave Venezuela as it's trying to help. And of course, the 20th week of the mainstream media utterly ignoring the violence used against the yellow vests. But to begin today, jam-packed show, with all of this happening, it seems the West, at least partially, is looking to create another emotionally charged distraction. At least that's how I see this first story, at least in part. But it's something we've seen happening a lot, ongoing, something that's been repeatedly done, even in regard to Duma, which we know was a false flag, proven now, and they still drive it home. This coming from the 21st Century Wire, seems like it's happening again. Syria report claims French, Belgian intelligence plotting chemical false flag in Idlib. Now, this has been developing for a while. Idlib is clearly beginning again. We see Syria and Russia continuing to take back Syria's territory in Idlib, which is an utterly dominated terrorist-held area, even by the U.S.'s own admission, as they continue to try to make it seem like they're bombing civilian territories, which I was going to be covering the other day, but I'm going to be interviewing Vanessa Bealey on the 4th of April about that, as well as white helmets involved in human trafficking. So I'm going to hold off on that topic until then, because she's going to be much more knowledgeable on that than I am. But the reality is this has been increasing. And as we saw before, the United States continues to say that if Russia or Syria does anything like this, attacking the terrorists that are occupied in this area, that they will defend them. They've said it repeatedly. So now that they're increasingly beginning to take back this area, this is beginning to happen again. And there's evidence to support the fact this has happened. And remember, for those that shrug and scoff at the idea of such a topic, even the idea of a false flag, despite the very clear historical documentation of this happening in this country and other countries around the world, creating false flags, lying, psychological operations, but the historical documented fact that it's happened in this country in very recent memory, in Syria, numerous times. So the fact that it may be happening again is more than likely based on what we already know and the circumstances we're looking at today. Now, new reports suggest that Western-backed terrorist forces, situated in Al-Qaeda-occupied Idlib province, which it clearly is, in northern Syria, are planning to stage, another chemical weapons event in order to blame Damascus in hopes of triggering another U.S.-led military strike on Syria. Now, remember, as U.S. is clearly struggling on what it's going to be doing in Syria, pretending it's leaving, not leaving at all, actually increasing its location or its presence there, if something like this were to happen, all of a sudden it's justified again. We need to be here because Israel's under attack in Syria. And the same thing, oh, Iran's encroaching on our territory. And now it looks like they've just carried another false flag out, or, you know, in their eyes, another chemical attack, which clearly, especially Duma specifically, is an obvious false flag, verifiably so. As the BBC producer admitted, as numerous people have come out and shown, and the facts on the ground are making it obvious. Now, French and Belgian intelligence officers have arrived in Syria's Idlib in order to help militants there stage a chemical weapons provocation, according to the head of the research center, or excuse me, the head of the Russian Center for the Reconciliation of Opposing Sides in Syria. He revealed this on a press briefing on March 30th. Now, again, of course, those that want to reflexively think, well, I heard the word Russia in there, that must be a lie, recognize that they've been correct every single time they've made these predictions so far. Every single time. Without fail. Easy to verify that. But see, people don't like to listen to that when they want to make sure they focus just on the mainstream media propaganda. Now, according to the Major General, intelligence has been received, which indicates that French and Belgium intelligence services have been plotting to stage a false flag chemical attack in Idlib in order to basically somehow frame Russia and Syria and strengthen the case for more Western military intervention. And of course, to aid the terrorist forces that are currently occupying Idlib, as we've shown repeatedly, those forces are backed entirely by Western powers, including the White Helmets that are involved there. But as RT reports, the attack is being prepared in close cooperation between operatives of Belgian and French secret services and terrorist groups, including the rebranded Syrian al-Qaeda offshoot Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, previously known as the al-Nusra Front, the group that is predominantly occupying the Idlib area, backed by Western powers, predominantly the United States. Now, apart from them, the fake humanitarian White Helmets group is also taking part in these preparations, which is very, very important. Despite all of the Western propaganda, it is abundantly clear what this group really is. Even people in mainstream circles have pointed out the obvious connections they have to terrorism. But the U.S. doesn't want to talk about that. They want to drive in. Actually, as we just pointed out, Trump is now paying them more, putting more money from U.S. tax dollars to help the White Helmets. Even though we've proven that they lied about Duma, clearly involved in, it's not like the U.S. wasn't aware they were lying. I think it's all part of an operation, but it's a fact that they lied there, and yet we're still funding them, the U.S. government is. Now, a batch of poisonous gas, believed to be chlorine-based, has already been delivered to a number of villages in the Idlib province, according to this report. Now, the poison is packed in canisters disguised as oxygen and natural gas tanks, according to the Russian military. Now, the plotters have discussed the filming of the upcoming false flag attack and are expected to repurpose previous footage of a recent Russian strike on a drone warehouse in Idlib to, quote, prove Moscow's involvement. So they already, and remember, if and when this happens, these are the kind of facts that make it clear that they had evidence this was going to happen. They're planning to use specific footage of them bombing a military target in Idlib and then making that out to be a civilian target in the future false flag. And that's an important part to remember. Now it says, while the actors are offered some $100 apparently for playing the roles of chemical victims in this attack, they claim that there is a distinct possibility that the militants will poison people to make it real, to make the video, they say, quote, more lifelike. This is according to the officials that are warning that perpetrators may use real toxic materials in order to achieve authenticity of photo and video materials. That's an alarming thing to think about, especially if we're talking about people that think they're participating in some kind of a, you know, staged fake event for whatever reason, and then actually get poisoned with gas, and they're the ones they use. Now, these are all claims being made. Take them for what you will. But as I said before, Russia has made these claims countless times, including before the Duma false flag, and they've been right every time. So factor that into the process when you decide whether or not to blindly trust one or the other. Look at the facts. Look at the history. Look at what we've seen before. And the reality is the U.S. has repeatedly lied about these and staged these things in order to carry out its agenda in Syria, tied in with Israel and Saudi Arabia as well. And this is an important development, and we have to pay attention as this continues to grow. And I do believe, in my opinion, that this is, if it is true, being used to pull us away from things that are not going so well for the Western powers right now, specifically Venezuela and the floundering effort there. Something like this on the other side of the world would clearly be, especially if, you know, maybe American people died. That's certainly a possibility. They could charge up emotionally. Oh, everybody needs to pay attention because this really emotionally charged thing just happened, which is what they usually do. That's an important topic. Now, in other news in regard to Syria, and this is what I think is so important as we continue to force information about other things on us, people die all the time due to U.S. actions around the world and Israeli actions and Saudi Arabian actions, and they don't do anything about it. They don't talk about it. The Western media willfully, dutifully ignores it, just like this, where we have 50 more people who just died in Syria. How interesting. How continually this happens, that people just die and nobody bats an eye. Now, U.S. officials desperately want to brand the ISIS battle in Syria as over. For the 15th time they've claimed in 3 months. So long as it's clear for everyone out there that this supposed victory won't actually involve withdrawing forces or actually ending anything at all. As long as you're okay with that, we can say, well, we won, it's all over, but we're going to stay there nonetheless. Now, the village of Baghouz, however, continues right now to be the center of conflict. Now, according to multiple reports, U.S. forces attacked some caves on the outskirts of Baghouz on Thursday, killing over 50 people. Now, they're assuming, as they usually do, based on the fact that if they're there when they bomb, they must be militants. That's literally the U.S. logic. They broad stroke anybody as in the location they bomb as being militants. They are assuming that everyone killed was an ISIS remnant, though, of course, none were positively identified. But, of course, using the word remnant because ISIS is defeated, right? But we're still killing people involved with ISIS, and there's still battles going on with ISIS, but they're defeated. Don't get it wrong. They're all defeated. We won. It's over. Always. Always the hyperbole coming from the Trump administration. Now, the conclusion of ISIS is based on the fact that ISIS had fighters hidden in caves and connected underground bunkers. Their conclusion that this was ISIS people that were there that they killed. Yet there was also what Kurdish forces described that are working with the United States forces, that these Kurdish forces described as nearly endless numbers of civilians hiding in the same area. Funny how even their own forces are contradicting their claims. And they said with tens of thousands fleeing the tiny village long after everyone had assumed it was more or less entirely depopulated. Basically saying tens of thousands of civilians are in the area the U.S. just bombed and people are dying. Now that these strikes are still focused on what is effectively Baghouz contradicts claims that the Kurds actually won that village, which is the claim. As clearly the U.S. believes someone is still there worth bombing. Well, after the war was defeated, you know, we won, it's over, ISIS defeated, but they're still carrying out these operations and civilians are still dying. And as we are discussing killing innocents with zero oversight and with impunity, we, of course, cannot forget to discuss Israel. And, of course, as they ignore the actions of U.S. and its allies and focus on all of their adversaries, this, just like the 50 people that died in Syria, don't get discussed. Today, a Palestinian youth is killed in Israel in a Gaza bombing. And it's important to think about the fact that the bombings continue to this day, right now. So we're talking about a rocket that was fired that caused minimal damage, didn't kill anybody, and Israel has maintained a multiple-day barrage on Gaza and clearly killing innocent people. Does that seem proportionate to you? Especially as I continue to point out that there was no investigation of who fired and where the rocket came from. They just arbitrarily say, oh, it came from this area, then it's Hamas. And they admit they can't prove it's Hamas. They're not even sure it's Hamas. But because it came from Gaza, we're going to say it's Hamas. They've said this repeatedly. Because they're in control, anything that happens anywhere is going to be their fault. That's just the easy way they can make them the scapegoat. But we don't even know for sure. It could have been Israel that fired the rocket to create the justification to carry out the attack. Could have been the United States to do the same thing. It could have been a rogue anybody. You know why I can say that? Because nobody conducted an investigation. They just immediately, within moments, said Hamas, and the U.S. stood up and said, oh, I agree with Israel. And they've continued to bomb Gaza repeatedly over and over in millions of civilians in these locations. I mean, just think about that. And now we're talking about a specific case, and it is sad to personalize the reality of people dying for no good reason. 20-year-old Palestinian Mohammed Jihad Saad was killed this morning in an Israeli artillery bombing in the east of Gaza City. Now, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza, Saad was wounded by shrapnel when Israel bombed a Palestinian security checkpoint. Sure sounds like a Hamas stronghold to me. What do you think? This is during Palestinian efforts, of course, to ensure vocally, publicly, this is something they've been forcing to ensure that the planned 1 million man protest, which actually marks the 1 year anniversary of the Great March of Return for them to, you know, take back what's rightfully theirs and return to their land, is to ensure that it's peaceful. So while they're trying to ensure this is peaceful, Israel decides to bomb a Palestinian security checkpoint. You know, a checkpoint that's put in place to mitigate where and how Palestinians can move around in their freedom that they have, of course. The reality being that they live in an open-air prison that no one likes to address. Now, Saad's death brought the number of Palestinians killed in Israel during the Great March of Return to 263. Imagine if Maduro had killed 263 people, civilians, unarmed, or at least by the UN's report, at least 180 of them have been unarmed. Imagine if he killed one person in a protest. Enough, then they had evidence. Imagine what would happen. Of course, we know. I think we all know the reality and the contradiction therein. Now, in the run-up to Saturday's rallies, the Israeli army has deployed numerous tanks and armored vehicles along the buffer zone with the Gaza Strip. On Thursday, Netanyahu reportedly instructed the army to prepare for a possibility of a broad campaign in Gaza, clearly maintaining this for his election purposes, at least in part. But the reality is another person died for no good reason, civilians involved in a political war that's being perpetuated unjustly, predominantly by Israel right now. We can see it. One rocket and a barrage of attacks on a civilian location. It's impossible. It's actually really hard to not see the reality. As I always point out, it takes some aggressive effort on the individual's part to not see what's really happening and blindly take what they want you to think is happening, because it's that abundantly obvious. And as I was just actually warning that Trump's recent Golan Heights declaration, despite being condemned universally by the international community, would further embolden Netanyahu's disregard for international law and just law in general. Well, now we have an example of that. Israel to approve 4,500 new settlement units in the West Bank. Clearly, exactly what we've been talking about. The reality that they are going to ramp up their acts that are widely regarded as illegal because Trump said, yeah, go ahead. I'll sign a piece of paper. You do what you want. We were already allowing you to get away with basically anything you do. This just shows you, this is documenting the fact that as long as the U.S. and their military might has their back, they'll do what they want. As I pointed out before, Israel repeatedly, right, this continues to unprovoked attack Syria, which is a war crime. It's a violation of international law. No one disputes that. All they say, the U.S. and Israel, is, oh, well, Iran's there. Okay. It's still illegal. Everyone still agrees. They just pretend like saying Iran's present somehow gives them the justification to break the law. So now, because of Trump's statement and proclamation, Israel is going, we're going to see more moves just like this. And as I pointed out recently, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump in the very near future also signs a proclamation giving them the West Bank. Settlements being illegal, mind you, widely regarded as. Now, the Israeli government is expected to approve construction of 4,500 new illegal settlements in occupied West Bank this week. Approximately 650,000 Jewish settlers currently live on more than 100 illegal settlements in the Israeli-occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem. Again, to make sure you're clear on this, universally acknowledged as illegal settlements, illegally occupied. They don't care, because no one seems to be able to hold them accountable, so why should they care? Now, international law, as I said, views the West Bank and East Jerusalem as occupied territories and considers all Jewish settlement building activity there illegal. Now, think about the relevance in regard to Netanyahu's recent statements about the fact that, well, because of Trump's statement, we're basically showing that international law no longer holds sway, and if we take this in war, it's now ours, even though international law maintains that if something gets taken during wartime, it's actually supposed to be returned. But we've seen clearly that the U.S. and Israel don't care about that whatsoever. And now very clearly we're seeing that these are illegal and they're taking more of them, knowing in their mind that they've already declared, at least in Trump's mind and Netanyahu's mind, that they're allowed to do this because they've taken it by might. As Trump said, to the victor go the spoils. This is the new age we're in today, that they can illegally take what they want because they're strong enough to do it. I mean, think about what we're doing here and what we're saying for the rest of the world. Now, the Palestinians, for their part, want both these territories along with the besieged Gaza Strip for the establishment of any future Palestinian state. You know, because everything they're currently on used to be Palestine. Maybe they should get just a scrap of what they used to have. Or maybe all of it. It's occupied Palestine, which is literally, by the way, why it's called occupied territories. The ridiculous nature of pretending there was no Palestine or that Israel didn't take anything is willfully ignoring the obvious history of the situation. Occupied territories means illegally occupied. Hence, they're illegally occupying Palestine, as the United Nations is clearly pointing out. It's important that we see what they're really doing and the fact that this is going to continue. They're going to ramp up these efforts. And it's because of the proclamation, but it's been going on much longer than that. This just gave them the free will in their mind to continue to push forward with it. And again, while all this stuff happens, they ignore all of it. All the U.S. allies and all their crimes get pushed off to the side while they try to manufacture fake stories about their adversaries they want to overthrow. And speaking of that, for the next story, in regard to Venezuela, because this is exactly what's happening. Coming from Zero Hedge, return to Middle Ages. Venezuela again plunged into darkness. Red Cross mobilizes. Now, Red Cross is that point of the story is basically the Red Cross has been given free rein now by Venezuela to bring in unlimited amounts of aid. Again, showing you how ridiculously wrong and intentionally false the U.S. narrative that no other aid is coming in is. Of course, now that the Red Cross has been given unlimited access, they've already had massive access. They doubled their efforts recently. Now that they've given Red Cross unlimited access, interestingly enough, both Guaido and Maduro are saying, success! That's a win for us! We win! Which is just ridiculous. The point is that's Guaido trying to latch on to any stupid thing he can to make it appear as if they've gotten some kind of a success. No, that's Maduro saying, yes, bring in the aid, as we've been doing the whole time. They try to manipulate any point they can and lie to you. Aggressively. Regularly. And of course, we know that the entire idea of these blackouts stems back to a U.S. sabotage. Now, ahead of broad opposition protests that were planned for today, Caracas and other large cities across Venezuela were once again plunged into darkness, actually late last night, Friday evening, just as the country struggled to fully recover from prior days-long outages that we can show clearly were linked to the United States. Now, this weekend's outage marks the fourth power outage this month, just this month, that began on March 7th. Now, in response to the earlier outages, Venezuela's defense ministry vowed to deploy armed forces to protect the national electricity system. President Nicolas Maduro, of course, blamed Washington for the earlier outages, claiming over Twitter that the Trump administration was engaged in an electrical war, he called it, which was announced and directed by American imperialism against our people, he said, which is abundantly, it's obvious. I mean, it's very clear to see the connections. And their tweets coming minutes after things happen before, you know, Rubio tweets 3 minutes after it happens. No one in the ground even knows what happens yet. Like, that's just pretty ridiculous. That's a lack of intelligence on his part to not wait enough time to make it clear that you weren't connected to it. But it's more than just that. Now, according to early unconfirmed reports, this latest blackout appears to be the result of, guess what? The hydroelectric water generators inside the Guri power plant failing again. Now, just to reiterate this point, as I've made this point repeatedly, U.S. fingerprints, U.S. government fingerprints are all over this entire thing from the very beginning to this very moment right now. As I pointed out before, Grayzone doing excellent research. This actually believed coming from a WikiLeaks release. U.S. regime change blueprint proposed Venezuelan electricity blackouts as watershed event for galvanizing public unrest. Now, for those that have been watching this channel, you've already seen this. As the very beginning, it reads, the U.S.-funded CANVAS organization, that's the acronym, CANVAS, that trained Juan Guaido and his allies and trained thousands of U.S.-allied youth activists in countries, you know, where the West seeks regime change, CANVAS produced a 2010 memo on specifically, verbatim, exploiting electricity outages and urged the opposition to, quote, take advantage of the situation towards their needs of regime change. And they literally documented, guess what? The Guri power plant. I mean, it's just ridiculous to think, and this is a U.S.-backed group outlining how they were going to regime change Venezuela, and it's literally how it's carrying out right now. And it just so happens that every single time, all three of these so far have been directly linked to the Guri hydroelectric plant. You think that's coincidence? And all the other information, all of the tweets and the connections and the fact that Rubio and Pompeo and Bolton all basically, I see something coming. Oh, it's going to get bad for Venezuela. I foresee problems with energy. Like, it's just ridiculous. And they pretend, they say, oh, it's just because Venezuela's bad. We saw it coming. No, it's because you're involved in carrying it out, as your 2010 memo very clearly outlines. As always, they don't think people are smart enough to do the smallest amount of research. The U.S. has repeatedly denied this charge, that they're involved, while taking increasingly bolder steps to attempt to legitimize U.S. puppet self-declared interim president Juan Guaido. Simultaneously, Maduro, of course, has stripped Guaido of public office, barring him for 15 years, which is a pretty big step. This is from Zero Hedge. Venezuela strips Guaido of public office for 15 years. I mean, of course, this is, you know, as far as Washington's concerned, oh, it's illegitimate because this isn't the real government. And that only applies to Guaido and the U.S. circle. Everybody else in the world acknowledges Maduro as the government. So this is funny because they try to force this as that our opinion is the popular. It's not. The vast majority of Americans don't want this. The vast majority of Venezuelans don't want this. The vast majority of the world still acknowledge Maduro as the president. That's all simple facts, easy to verify. And they want you to think that it needs to happen. Now, Venezuelan state comptroller Elvis Amoroso charged that Guaido had, quote, inconsistencies in his personal financial disclosures and a spending record that did not match his level of income, and indeed barred him for office for 15 years. And of course, that, you know, the opposition would say this is all fabricated. It's all lies. And it could be. Definitely could be. But understand that the information we've seen thus far makes this seem likely based on where he's come from and what he's done so far. And the fact that he literally just got caught trying to steal $1 billion from Venezuela. Now, Guaido's being banned from public office. His being banned came less than 24 hours after the opposition leader announced his plans for his supporters to launch, quote, tactical actions starting next week, he said, as part of his Operation Freedom, of course. Never a shortage of the ridiculous contradictory names they give each, you know, Patriot Act and all the things they give is ridiculous. It means the opposite, almost always, which is humorous. But his Operation Freedom, of course, very clearly he outlines is specifically to overthrow President Nicolas Maduro. Because that's what he's doing openly, right? And of course, because Nicolas Maduro is such a dictator as they make out, Guaido has been in prison since the moment he's... Oh, wait, no, that's not what happened. Guaido has been wandering around free, screaming about overthrowing the government and starting tactical actions and creating groups and rioting protests. And for some reason, he's still walking around free. What a dictator Maduro is, allowing the newspapers to write terrible things about, oh, what a dictator. Of course, I'm being facetious. The ridiculous nature of them continuing to make the claim that he's a dictator while everything suggests otherwise. As he's wandering the streets screaming about overthrowing Nicolas Maduro and carrying out massive anti-Maduro protests. And there are, there's large ones. But the counterpoint to that is that there's also much larger pro-Maduro protests that they don't show you. Now, all of this, of course, comes the same month that Marco Rubio told a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing that basically, quote, over the next few weeks, Venezuela is going to enter a period of suffering no nation in our hemisphere has ever confronted in modern history. And that's one of the quotes I was just referencing to, that he came out with this before this all started. Somehow he just knew it was about to start. He must be psychic. Clearly, Rubio's not that bright, so I don't give him credit for seeing this coming. That's my opinion anyway. Now, Guaido said via Twitter that such tactical actions are to begin April 6th, which will involve freedom cells, he calls them, which terrorist cells, most likely, I would imagine, set up across the country, rising up in mass protest when the order is given. Again, knowing he's openly saying these things, that he's setting up protests that he's going to call, it's like a it's a revolution. Of course, Maduro's just supposed to let it happen, but he is. He's allowing this man to walk around because this is all propaganda. No one is on his side. It's clear that the vast majority think Guaido is ridiculous. And he continues to say these and try to take credit for things that Venezuela is doing. But they want you to think it's about to happen. And their hope is that this will make people think it's about to happen. And they go, well, I might as well join the winning side. But they're not winning. He began publicly referencing Guaido, the plan, earlier this month at opposition rallies. So it's been ongoing. Continuing talking about freedom cells and tactical actions and revolutions on the ground against Maduro. Now, he described it as a, quote, full-fledged revolution in all states of Venezuela simultaneously. I mean, think about the statement he's making. This has even included talk of Operation Freedom operatives and mass protesters ultimately marching on the Miraflores Presidential Palace, the home of President Maduro. I mean, this is one of the most important points that I try to make here, that just as I usually point out, what do you think Trump would do in this situation? What do you think Trump would do if you had somebody wandering the streets, screaming about overthrowing the government, organizing mass revolutions, talking about marching on the White House to overthrow the government? I wonder what Trump would do. Well, here's a perfect example, as you can see. But you know what? I'm sure that Trump will demand that this man who wanted to attack the Pentagon will be released as well because, you know, he's fighting for freedom and democracy. It's just absurd. All of it hinges on the narrative that Maduro's bad, that Venezuelan government are bad guys. And that's it. Don't question it. Don't probe further. Trust us. They're just bad guys. They're the bad guys. And so anything that happens over there is we're going to bend it to suit our narrative. Right? We don't want to talk about the fact that Guaido is unknown, that he's raised and cultivated by the U.S., that he is literally carrying out a regime change manual in Venezuela, tried to rob them of $1 billion. This is literally a criminal. And you think that Trump, if this wasn't happening here, he wouldn't lock this person up? And guess what? Maduro hasn't. I mean, just think about that comparison. I find that to be incredibly relevant. And of course, now we talked about the previous story of Russia being there. And now, of course, the U.S. can't have that. Can't have Russia helping and looking again to be the person saving the day while the U.S. fails in their aggressive efforts. U.S. government. Trump is demanding that Russia get out of Venezuela, you know, because Venezuela is U.S. property, so they can tell them what to do, right? Seems like that's what they think, doesn't it? So President Trump has issued a statement Tuesday demanding that Russia withdraw its troops from Venezuela immediately. And saying, of course, as always in their pompous manner, that all options are on the table for the U.S. to force them out. Because they apparently can do what they want. If they want, if they don't like someone there, they can use all their possible options to go into a country illegally and force their ally out of their country. Now, Trump says Venezuela is under a lot of pressure. Quote, they have no money, they have no oil, they have nothing. Adding that other than U.S. military force, they can't put out any, they couldn't put any more pressure on them. Well, thanks, Donald, for yet again making it ridiculously obvious that you're hurting the Venezuelan people. Taking their money, taking their resources. These literally says they have nothing. And they pretend they're doing this for the Venezuelan people. I mean, how stupidly absurd. Now, Russia noted that the development was legal under Venezuelan law, which it clearly is. That 100 troops that were sent were in line with Venezuelan bilateral agreements. Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova accused the U.S. of acting like an elephant in a china shop, which is kind of funny. Reflecting that for the U.S. administration, that war is only a matter of time. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo already is offering estimates, if you can believe this, on how much the post-war rebuilding of Venezuela will cost. You know, after the U.S. invades and conquers the country. Let me repeat that, just in case you didn't get the gravity of that statement. As he's reflecting that for the United States administration, that war is only a matter of time, Mike Pompeo is already offering estimates of how much the post-war rebuilding of Venezuela would cost after the U.S. invades. Clearly, they're not trying to overthrow the country. They're just supporting a popular uprising. Clearly. I mean, it's just offensive to your... It is truly, truly offensive to me. It insults your intelligence that they don't think you can see how stupidly obvious they're saying it themselves. Screaming that Russia has to get out of Venezuela while trying to again stop U.S. from overthrowing another country. Now, of course, as this person rightly pointed out, Trump to Putin, get out of Venezuela. Well, Putin to Trump, get out of Afghanistan, get out of Syria, Iraq, Yemen, Libya, Ukraine, Poland, Bulgaria, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Kosovo, Georgia, Albania, Norway, Honduras, Brazil, Korea, Japan, Singapore, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Tunisia, Sudan, he went on and on. I couldn't put it all in the tweet for you to see. Do you get the point? Do you get how stupidly hypocritical it is for them to tell them to get out of any country while they're literally encircling Russia with their bases around right in their neck of the woods? But oh no, you can't be allowed to come on our side of the world, as if the U.S. owns this side of the world. Of course, no U.S. threat is complete unless all the neocon warmongers come join the chorus to make clear that all options are on the table, because they can't say that enough today, can they? Really driving it home. On March 26th, U.S. Special Representative for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, you know, war criminal Elliot Abrams, convicted war criminal involved in other illegal coups and shuttling weapons under the guise of humanitarian aid multiple times in the past. That Elliot Abrams working for Venezuela now, yeah, for them, right? Says, quote, we have very nice options on paper of the various things that can be done in the U.S.-Russian relations. There are a lot of things on that list. Like, it's clearly a veiled threat. So the Russians will pay a price for this, he says. And then a very overt threat. Which is just ridiculous. Pay a price for what, Elliot? For working with their allies? Like, this is absurd. John Bolton warned countries in general, quote, external to the Western Hemisphere, or countries, excuse me, he warned that, quote, countries external to the Western Hemisphere against developing military forces in Venezuela or, quote, elsewhere in the hemisphere, in a statement made on the same day. Trying to make this out to be some kind of military venture, which Russia says it's not. But even if it was, that's still also not against the law. They're working with their allies, the same way that U.S. has troops all over the world, very close to Russia. But it only works one way, apparently. Now, he added that the U.S. would consider such military developments to be provocations and a, quote, direct threat to international peace and security in the region, which I can't even say without laughing. As the U.S. is literally destabilizing their country for regime change, they say that you need to leave Russia because you're destabilizing the region. What they're doing is destabilizing their efforts to overthrow the country, right? They're screwing up U.S.'s floundering regime change. Can't have that. Now, take a moment and reflect on what the U.S. is really saying here when they say that Russia's not allowed to be here, that the U.S. government literally has the final say, even on what's happening inside Venezuela. This is what they're saying. All because Venezuela happens to be on their side of the world. What does this say to independent nations everywhere? At what point did U.S. interests trump the decisions of a foreign nation's government? Where they can say, oh, well, this is a national security for us, wherever it is. We need to go in and stop this from happening. Or you're in our hemisphere, so even though you want to do something with your ally that's your right as a sovereign nation, you can't because I say so. How did this ever become the case? Again, just shows you the utter hypocrisy that they'll claim these things when it aligns with their allies, but never when it talks about the bad guys. And the bad guys being anyone that doesn't align with U.S. agendas. Doesn't mean they're doing bad things. It simply means they're not willing to bend the knee to the imperialist agenda. Now, in quite an ironic remark on the topic, Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova, interestingly, always coming out with her quips, noted, the rhetoric about Russia invading the Western Hemisphere, supposed to be Washington's backyard, aside from belonging straight out of the colonial era, is not even factually accurate. She says, I would like to draw the attention of Washington politicians to a geographical map. So funny. Part of the territory of the Russian Federation, the Chukotka Peninsula, if I'm saying that correctly, is located right in the Western Hemisphere. So for Russia, the American continent is a close neighbor. I mean, it's so funny that I don't even think they consider the truth when they outline their propaganda. Literally, they're saying their point they're making there is part of Russia is in the Western Hemisphere, their peninsula, this part of Russian territory, I should say. And clearly, either they didn't know that, which I argue they probably don't know at all. Most of these people probably can't even point out places on a map. But they just don't care. They just make the narrative that, oh, well, they're on that side of the world. We're on this side. They can't be part of this, which is wrong. I mean, it's the same ridiculous way that they make all these claims about chemical attacks that have been debunked, or all, I mean, any of the number of things they continue to say that are verifiably false. They just don't care. They say it over and over until it becomes true. Classic propaganda. Now, the mask is certainly slipping. I think we can see it as it becomes more and more obvious just how outside the law the U.S. government is currently operating. And they're going to great lengths to try to keep you in line with their approved narrative. But as I recently pointed out, they're not doing a very good job. Here's another example of their failing propaganda efforts that I just can't help but laugh at. So yet another stark example of outright propaganda, whether it's directly made by the government or people that are brainwashed by it and decide to make something up to sell it because they're doing the right thing, which happens a lot. People will utterly lie and do the exact thing they accuse the other side of because they believe they're on the right side of things, which is just ridiculously contradictory. But the reality is that that's a bunch of fake information, making it seem like, oh, look at these terrible things happening in Venezuela is such a terrible place. And it's all fake. It's all fabricated information, just like basically everything the U.S. has put forward about this entire illegal coup so far, getting caught time and time again, utterly lying about the blocking of the bridge, about the humanitarian aid to begin with, about the fact that no aid is getting in, about the fact that what was in the humanitarian aid, or about the fact that they set the trucks on fire. I mean, it's just lie after lie after lie, very easily proven. It's pretty sad when you really realize how bad they're doing right now. And that's just yet another example. Now, finally, to end today, as has become my custom, I guess, it is important to point out, again, over and over, that this is now the 20th week straight of the largest legitimate and peaceful revolution movement in my lifetime. And it is still being willfully obfuscated by the mainstream media propagandists. Now, here is a clip of what is happening week after week and getting continually ignored. Now, you can see that these people are not violent protesters. You can see very clearly that these people are just standing there. So, you know, so much for their protected right to demonstrate non-violently. I mean, he's making a point by just standing there, putting his back to them. They're not doing anything illegal. They're not violently protesting. The point is they're just simply shutting down the protest. They're not allowed to protest. That's the reality. They continue to shut these things down over and over. And you can see that the people aren't violent. These people are not rebelling. They're not doing anything violent. They're literally being shut down just because they're protesting. And this happens over and over. And that wasn't a particularly violent scene. But it's important to note that these aren't people that are throwing or hitting or attacking. They're just being forced out of their place of protest. Again, debunking the ridiculous narrative that they have, you know, their protected right to demonstrate, which France still claims is the case. Now, as I've repeatedly shown on this show, the justification used to shut down obviously nonviolent demonstrations, which France still pretends are protected, is the violence created by their own agent provocateurs. And there's a lot of great information that makes that clear, as I've shown on this show repeatedly. Here's a great tweet that says, important. Masked agent provocateurs trying to stir chaos and violence to discredit the movement. Here is a yellow vest protester tries to intervene to stop them from creating violence, which we've already shown in the past as well, and that person's attacked. And the mainstream media wants you to believe that the yellow vests are the violent ones. Think about that. Here's the video. As always, just take note of the people all in black with masks. The yellow vests are not part of it. The yellow vest man tries to stop it, and he gets attacked. It's important that we continue to see just how obvious this is. Here's how obvious these agent provocateurs are being used. It's a classic tactic. And as I pointed out recently, Vanessa Bealey herself, I've referenced this numerous times in the past. She lives in France. She has seen it repeatedly herself. As she says, I've witnessed this myself on the marches I participated in. Watching agent provocateurs being used while they will allow that violence, but then attack the yellow vests continually over and over. And we can't ignore that obvious tactic where they're not actually going after the people causing the violence. And of course, they're always all in black, not part of the yellow vest movement. Think about it. It's just so important for us to see this and how this is developing and why they're not talking about it while trying to force other things on you that aren't actually happening. Of course, the mainstream media is more than willing to report today on claims of tear gas apparently being used on protesters in Venezuela. Right? That's something they're more than willing to get all over it. While both acting as if this is unprecedented. Both the government and the mainstream media is unprecedented and ignores this exact action is happening by the French police for 20 weeks now. Or decades in Palestine for that matter. But they want you to think that this is such a big deal. Oh, they're using tear gas. Well, the United States uses tear gas on its protesters. Why French does? Well, Israel does. But they're not talking about that. But of course, it happens in Venezuela. Regardless of the context, oh my God, we have to condemn this. Of course, as Sarah Abdallah put it in an excellent tweet, hey, CNN, any chance you'll be broadcasting the footage of Macron's police tear gassing and brutalizing unarmed Veil of Vest protesters in Paris for the 20th week in a row today? Or are you too busy churning out war propaganda on Venezuela? I couldn't have said it better myself. Here is the video that she shares that I recommend people watching and sharing as well. Thank you for the super chat. And this is where you see the violence. This is where you see the tear gas. This is where you see the unnecessary acts against people who are not acting violently. You know, where are the tweets? Where's the mainstream coverage on this? Why is it more relevant that a report, apparently, tear gas is being used against protesters without context, mind you, in Venezuela? Why is that more relevant than this happening for the 20th week in a row? As people have died, lost eyes, arms, legs, family members. Tear gas everywhere. Using weapons that really hurt people. Supposedly non-lethal weapons that have killed people. I mean, it's just very frustrating to see this continue, the hypocrisy involved in all of it. It really needs to get under your skin and show you the true nature of what these people really are. Of course, to end the show today, a great tweet as well by Partisan Girl that really drives this point home, not just about the fact that they're ignoring it or that it's happening, but the fact that it's all interconnected in so many more ways than you can see, but this is one of the most important. The Palestinians are resisting Israel, which was created by a Rothschild. The Elovists are resisting Macron, which was created by a Rothschild. Syria is resisting Energini Energy, which was funded by a Rothschild. One struggle. Think about that. Think about the incredible relevance of what she's really saying there. One, about the nature of the what the Yellow Vests are all about. The globalist movement, which is what that's really referring to in my mind. The actual deep state, the unelected power structure that controls, not the Comeys and the Brennans that everyone wants to point to within this two-party deception QAnon ridiculous narrative, but the real deep state. The unelected power structure that we don't see, that operates behind the scenes. The reason that the Rothschilds and people like that are always left off the lists of the world's wealthiest people. I wonder why that is. It's all interconnected. And it connects back to U.S. foreign policy, Israeli foreign policy, all of it connects to the same larger agendas. They all have agendas of their own within the larger idea. But clearly there's a larger agenda happening here. And all of it connects back to the reality that they do not want us being able to talk about it. They do not want us being able to effectively spread the truth around their lies. And that's why they're trying to shut us down. On a regular basis, mind you. So thank you for all those tweets. Partisan Girl always puts those great ones out. A lot of great information coming out as always. There's too much going on today. There's far too much going on today for you to continue to just blindly watch mainstream media for those that may be tuning in today, may have just briefly caught this from somewhere else. So even if you disagree with what I'm saying or disagree with what my opinion is, I hope you will still take the time to dive into the show notes, look through the information, and try to take a moment and recognize how different it is from what they're telling you on the mainstream media. And so it's just so incredibly important today to recognize that they're not there to inform you. They are aggressively trying to misinform you, to try to cultivate a specific opinion to control the way you think. Thank you for tuning in today. If you'd like to support this channel, there's many ways to do so, from super chats. Thank you, Northern Lights. I appreciate it, my friend. To Bitbacker for cryptocurrency, PayPal, Patreon, many different ways. As always, you can get a Question Everything t-shirt if you want to go to truthclothing.io in the show notes and check that out and support Truth Clothing in general. Here's the page itself. Question Everything is our t-shirt. All the proceeds go to supporting this channel. And if you would like to get anything else from the website, add the code Vagabond. And it will also help support this channel. But at the end of the day, as long as you spread this information, get it out there, get it in front of people that would not otherwise see it, that's what really matters. And we are growing, and it's simply because of you, because we are people funded. I could not do this without you. I'm every day humbled by the support that I get. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.